The program is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our poet is the new Witter Binner Fellow at the Library of Congress, Major Jackson. And here he is with an opening poem in his own voice.
How to listen. I am going to cock my head tonight like a dog in front of McGlinchey's Tavern on Locust. I am going to stand beside the man who works all day combing his thatch of gray hair corkscrewed in every direction. I am going to pay attention to our lives unraveling between the forks of his fine-toothed comb. For once, we won't talk about the end of the world or Vietnam or his exquisite paper shoes. For once, I am going to ignore the profanity and the dancing and the jukebox so I can hear his head crackle beneath the sky's stretch of faint stars.
That's the voice of Major Jackson. I'm Grace Cavalieri. That was from his book, Leaving Saturn. And this is the book it took, because he was someone we were watching from a distance for a very long time anyway, and doing a lot of great things. But this book, which was nominated for, I believe, the National Book Critics Circles Award. That is a pretty big thing for a first, and it was from the Cavae Canem Award, and that's put out from an organization that was started by Toy Derricotte and Cornelius Eady.
That's right.
But Leaving Saturn has had more good reviews than I think I have read from a first book. Did you think so?
Yeah.
Unusually.
Normally that kind of critical attention comes either
later,
the second book or third book. So I felt very blessed in a way to have received as many reviews and received that kind of critical attention. It was pretty amazing.
And to be nominated for the National Book Critics Circle Award, I don't know many first books that get there. Was that something that made you real happy?
It blew me away.
It blew me away. Well, lots of things have been happening to you.
Yes.
And this book is just one of them. You're the Witter Binner Fellow
at
the Library of Congress. And that means that you're going to go to Vermont and act as an ambassador for poetry and do what?
And organize readings mostly. I visit elementary schools. And I carry that title with me, and the teachers, it's a means for them to push the Library of Congress as one of our prized institutions. But those are the primary, which is interesting because I've done that kind of work in the past. It's just great to have the Library of Congress kind of endorsement in a way.
So in addition to being an assistant professor of English at the University of Vermont, and being a poet in schools, then bringing the Witter Binner around with you, you're also on the faculty of Queens College in
Charlotte, North Carolina.
That's right. Master's program.
Right.
When I read this, I know Al Young chose this book. He was the he was the venerable person who gave you the award, I suppose. And he wrote a foreword to this book that was pretty incredible. And one of the things he says is that your poetry is to love the world with which you must do battle. What do you think of that? That gave me, do you know, that gave me a slogan for today, because there are some things I'm struggling with. I realize that my mission is to love those things that are so painful.
Well, it's, in my mind, it's the task of all artists, including writers, which is to be present in the world and to give it some shape and to honor it, to honor the world by writing about it, by capturing it as much as we can, either with an abstract eye or a realist eye. We must honor and be present in the moment and make sure that that shape has some sort of communal function. And I was very happy to read. I remember the day that the editor there said, you know, Al just sent in a very amazing introduction.
What
a very amazing
an introduction.
Forward. But what I really feel most proud about is winning the award, but more that he selected it, because he is a writer that I feel that all of America, I mean, he's one of our greatest cultural ambassadors, and he's a very, very talented artist as a, I mean, he's a poet, he's a fiction writer, he's an essayist.
He's a giant.
He is.
Yeah. Major Jackson at the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we're going to hear another poem.
This is to Sonia Sanchez. When death arrived like a police chopper in Ray Bans, and the paralyzed songs of children congealed to blocks of coal in your throat, and fingernail clippings of bankers flooded nightly your dreams, you, seeing the future creep towards the past in a stutter, coughed, what of our tomorrows, the legacy of our dreams? Down Lombard, near the AME, Du Bois's ward of Philadelphia Negroes, strutting beneath ginkgo trees, you told the story of the trip, the People's Republic of China, 73, a swelling hunger after a long flight, Mao's reception, and the other delegates, starving artists whose chopsticks moved faster than their mouths. That evening, famished in your room, you practiced with beads from your earrings, air tasting soft as bread. Later, Mao's patience, love for his people flowering. Sonia, I remember the color of the night, faces gathered in communion on the walls, orishas from the shore, the sax players wailing, Cousin Mary's righteous third eye stretched, a garden of prayers, drums slashed through fields, like the sticks you carried in your purse for years, a reminder to journey through the circle of tongues, your screams blooming to a wail.
Major Jackson was born in Philadelphia, North Philly, and has been called Langston Hughes of Philadelphia.
Oh, really?
Did you read that?
No, I did not.
He's had degrees from Temple and the University of Oregon. Was a member of the Darkroom Collective. We'll hear about what that means. Mm-hmm. And his poems have been in the American Poetry Review, Boulevard, Callaloo, The New Yorker, and other journals. His poetry also has been in anthologies. Beacon's Best of 1999, Creative Writing by Men and Women of All Colors by Entozaki Shange, editor. And then Spirit and Flame, an anthology of contemporary African-American poetry, and X Connect. Now, you have all of these things, and I have actually read your work before I met you. The American Poetry Review featured two great poems, The New Yorker. Don't you think that's a little unusual? I mean, just because, not because they get 5,000 poems a week, but they just print two poems an issue. So what are your chances? How did that happen? Over the transom?
Alice Quinn.
Oh, yeah.
The editor there.
She's was good.
Was able to, I guess.
She knew your work?
She knew my work. And
that's
she
good.
Called and asked if I had any poems.
Invited to be in the New Yorker. That's even worse. Oh, my gosh. So you didn't even have to spend a stamp. That's
right.
Terrific.
Right.
When was that? I think I remember that.
That was 2000.
It was Listening?
It was How to Listen.
How to Listen.
And Euphoria.
Euphoria, Mike. That is actually one of my favorite poems. And he has been a recipient of many fellowships and awards, and we will hear about them later. But for now, we're just going to go back to another poem.
Sure.
Major Jackson is his name. We're at the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. I don't know where I'd rather be.
This is called Blunts.
Mm.
The first time I got high, I stood in a circle of boys at 23rd and Ridge, tucked inside a doorway that smelled of piss. It was March. The cold rains all but blurred our sight as we feigned sophistication, passing a bullet-shaped bottle of malt. Johnny Cash had a love for transcendental numbers and explained between puffs resembling little gasps of air, the link to all creation was the mathematician. Malik, the smartest of the crew, counter-argued and cited the holy life of prayer as a gateway to the Islamic faith that was for all intents the true path for the righteous black man. No one disputed. Malik cocked his head, pinched the joint, and pulled so hard we imagined his lips crazy glued into stiff O's. It was long agreed that Lefty would inherit his father's used car business, thus destined for a life of wrecks. Then, amid a fit of coughing, I broke the silence. I want to be a poet. It was nearing dinner time. Jesus lived here. His sister was yelling at their siblings over the evening news and game shows. The stench of hot dogs and sauerkraut drifted down the dank hallway. A pre-spring wind flapped the plastic covering of a junk man's shopping cart as Eddie Hardrick licked left to right the thin strip of glue at the edge of a rolling paper, then uttered, "So, you want the tongue of God?" I bent double in the blade of smoke and looked up for help. It was too late. We were tragically hip.
Oh, we were tragically hip. Oh, destined for a lifetime of wrecks. Is that it? Or destined for a life of wrecks?
Life of wrecks.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And you said, "I want to be a poet." Oh, that's terrific. I also like the swing from having said that momentous thing to it was dinner time.
Mm.
What a nice swing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the smell of the kraut and the sensual part of the poem. Is that one of your favorites?
It is one of my favorites. It's
there's so much love in that.
In which I, in addition to looking back, you know, when you write about the past, oftentimes it is blurry. So, you know, I don't agree with that opinion that those who write about their lives are not utilizing their imagination. But this was an instance where it was a combination of the imagination and a memory, but more as a poem in which I taught myself structure, particularly rhetorical structure.
Oh.
So that moment that you just identified, that turn, was a moment that I was really most proud of.
I am too.
In the
that
poem.
That makes the poem.
You know, I think variation is very, very important in a poem. And that was one of the early poems that I learned.
And that moment of declaring yourself, I mean, that is a symbolic poem, really.
Right.
Do you really think you said it out loud?
It never happened.
It never happened.
It never happened.
See, the sauerkraut was real.
The sauerkraut was there. That's right.
Major
the TV
Jackson.
Shows and the sauerkraut.
I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we're at the Library of Congress. He's won awards from the McDowell Colony as a residency, Cave Canem, which is, of course, responsible for this book. He's gone to the Breadloaf Writers Conference, has been a part of the Fine Arts Work Center in Provincetown, I guess, as a fellow.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a commission from the Concerto Soloists Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia. What was that?
The Concerto Soloists decided that they were going to modernize Vivaldi's Four Seasons and localize it. So they commissioned four poets, four composers, and four photographers to each work on a season. And my assignment was spring. As much as I wanted fall, my assignment was spring. I think fall is my favorite season. Nonetheless, I worked with just two wonderful guys, and it was presented one weekend. They
with
played
music.
With music, mm-hmm. And it was also an opportunity.
Are you considered Philadelphia's son? I mean, does Philadelphia want to claim you?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I believe so. I, you know, of course I'm not living there now, but the city has fed me so much, and it was and still is to a great degree part of my intellectual and creative. It takes up a good deal of my creative gaze.
And the Pew Memorial Trust, which is only for Pennsylvania
That's
residents.
Right, the Pew Fellowship in the
thing.
Arts. That's right.
Right. And let's see. I know. You were the art curator at the Painted Bride, and I think you gave me a grant. I think in 1988 you gave me a grant for an opera, Migrations, that I was writing, or else it wasn't you, but somebody as nice
right,
as you.
Right, right.
You were in charge of all that stuff. What years were there?
I was finance director from 92 to 94.
Well, you know, that is an interesting thing about you, too. The accounting
Yes.
part of you. So here we have a poet who can write in free verse or formal verse, who teaches algebra to people in return for other things in his poetry, who has left brain, right brain pretty well together. And that is an unusual thing, isn't
well,
it?
Well, I believe
I called you professorial.
Yes, you did.
it's like a meteor with a degree.
Well, I believe it's, you know, I was fortunate enough to have the kind of education that was well-rounded.
It was.
That did not privilege the humanities over the science or the science over humanities. And also, it was a kind of encouragement at home to take up the life of the mind, to read books, to read the newspaper every Sunday, know what's going on in the world. So in this day and age, education is very much kind of...
Did you call it the Bethlehem College as the Bethlehem?
Oh, that's right, in one of the poems, that's right.
What is that line?
Well...
Maybe we'll get to that poem.
Yeah, I will read that poem now that you mention it, yeah.
And you were at the University of Oregon getting a master's, or was it an MFA?
MFA, and Master of Fine Arts.
Kind of interesting place to go after Philly.
Well, it gave me the distance I needed to have in order to write about the place.
Ah, that's an interesting point.
It's amazing how, you know, being away from Philadelphia, only the most kind of impactful moments and places would assert themselves in my consciousness. And
I never thought of having to leave it to write about it, really. Major Jackson is talking to us. I'm Grace Cavalieri. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress, and we've been wanting to meet him for a very long time. So here, meeting him is hearing him.
This is called Hoops. Trees fall so I can play ground with my ink, De La Soul. Bound by a falling cyclone fence, a black rush streaks for netless hoops, and one alone from a distance, seeming to break above the undulant pack, soars. More like a Sunday skywalk, he cups the ball, whirls his arm, swoops down a tomahawk. Radar, don't fly without me. It's Big Earl who coughs, then downs his bottle, a 40-ounce of Old E. Laughter makes its rounds. I cross a footpath of a city block, a short rut that snakes between a lush epitaph of dandelions and weed brush behind happy hollow courts. The ghost of a staircase echoes here, sign of lives lived, of souls lost. Faded hues of graffiti lines bombed on the wall. Faye says, don't stop the body rock. At gate's entrance, my gaze follows radar in his half-cocked jump shot. All morning, I sang hymns, yet weighed his form, his flash in the lane, quick stop to become skyborne. Now elbows set, a pair of handlebars, he flicks his wrist. The pill arcs through sunlight glare, splashes the basket's circle of air. A boombox bobs and breaks beats on a buckling sea of asphalt. The hard driving rhymes of BDP rousing that rowdy crowd of hustlers tossing craps, waging fists, dollar bets, only louder. And one, more enraged, promises to pistol whip the punk who doesn't pay. He doubles up, blows a kiss, each dealer counts his days. I turn from these highlights, Spalding's missile like meteors. Radar dribbles near, you're late, and before I say a word, my boy still shooting geometry. We laugh, Father Dave, coach at St. Charles, once let me play as a walk-on in hopes I would tutor Radar. Not even Pythagoras could awaken in his head the elegance of a triangle's circumference. 4 years later, he's off on scholarship to UNC. I'm to study Nabokov at State's University. Proof of Pop-Pop's maxim, there's more ways to skin. If the slum's our dungeon, school's our Bethlehem. Yet what connects those dots that rattle hustlers' palms with radar's stutter step and my pen's panopticon? It casts shadows dark as tar as we begin our full-court run. A brick off the half moon side, and waves we sprint, no set offense, his pass, my bounce, his deft lateral two hand jam.
Motion, movement, and words. It's funny that you say Nabokov in that poem because there are times when you remind me of him. I'm not kidding. Because when you read Nabokov, mm-hmm. you all of a sudden, he will quite surprise you with a word that you don't know, really, mm-hmm. and don't expect. And you do that, too. You go along with the usual. Then all of a sudden, you'll have just one flaming magenta word in there that one doesn't expect. Mm-hmm. And that is very much like him. Mm. Also, there's another person that may surprise you that I compare you to, and that's Pinsky.
Wow, that's an honor.
Has anyone ever?
Well, I wonder if that's you're picking up a lineage there, because I believe that although Pinsky did not study, let's say, study with Walcott or Robert Lowell, those are definitely influences in my work.
Oh.
And that attention to what I called a rhetorical variety for me reflects itself also in syntactical variety.
Oh,
and
that's
I see that operative in Robert Pinsky's work, whose work I'm very fond of. It's quite an honor.
I didn't know that you liked Lowell
and
were influenced by him.
But
with Pinsky, he will give you the history of America.
That's right.
You know, in one poem. And you do that too.
That's right.
There is a sense of historicity in your work. Even though it's very contemporary, we get very much the sweep of where America's been and where it's going.
It's funny you say that, and I'll read the poem that that last statement just reminded me of. But I firmly believe that has to do with living in a democracy that is as pluralistic as our society. The fact that we are fed and led by so many cultures. Mm. We have to honor, we have to pay attention to that. And it's important because I believe that is the source of the vitality of this country and as well as American literature.
But not only do you honor American letters, you actually pay homage to individuals who haven't quite made it yet even. I mean, who should have, mm-hmm. but not everybody mm-hmm. who works so hard gets mm-hmm. all the awards that they mm-hmm. should. I mean, when I read some of the people mm-hmm. you mentioned, Leonard Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Leonard
yes,
Moore.
Indeed.
When
yes,
have
indeed.
I ever seen his name mentioned except by you?
That's right.
And
that's
what right. a fantastic force he is in
he
America.
Is. That's right. That's right.
And you will, Michael Weaver.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Weaver,
mm-hmm.
a god among men,
mm-hmm.
who you put front and center every time you open your mouth.
That's right. That's right. I think it's important.
Very important.
I think it's important.
But not everybody does it.
Yeah, well,
you know that.
You know, I do.
They take the money and run.
That's right. But, you know, it's interesting you say that because I was thinking a lot about people like Gwendolyn Brooks and Sonia Sanchez. Gwendolyn Brooks is someone who's occupying my space now because I'm writing this poem to her.
Oh.
But there is a generosity among writers, particularly among poets in this country, and you know, the community is large, but at the same time it's also small. And I believe it's people like Gwendolyn Brooks who is legendary in her generosity and her care of writers and human beings, and we learn that and we pass that
mm-hmm.
on, you know, we pass that on. So people like Afaa Weaver and Sonia Sanchez, and as well as Gwendolyn Brooks, I've been a direct recipient of her generosity. You know, they teach by example, and that's what I want to do. And I also have my literary mentors. In terms of, you know, the people that I also write about, literary and otherwise, people like Philip Levine, who dignifies the lives of people who do not hit the cultural radar at times. Or I think of the work of James Wright, you know, in Southern Ohio, you know. So that's where I get my impulses from. And I want to be a part of that dialogue. And I think it's a grand dialogue to write about the people in this country.
And you write some pretty prose, too, by the way.
Thank you.
Major Jackson.
Yeah.
I've read some. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and he is our Winter Binner Fellow. For the next year, he was chosen by Billy Collins.
Yes.
Right. And now, how do you know Billy?
I do not know Billy.
He knew your work.
He knew my work. He knew my work. In fact, when I did finally meet him, it was just mutual admiration.
How do you suppose he read your work?
Well, I will say that certain publications, like the New Yorker, they just afford you a kind of visibility that you would not otherwise receive. Mm-hmm.
You think that was it?
I believe so. In fact, I know that was it.
Because I think God loves you. I just think God loves you.
Oh, I have some good ancestors, and that's right.
And they're always working. Me too. They're always working. Major Jackson's going to read to us some more. This is Leaving Saturn, and it's the University of Georgia Press. This prize is varying between three presses, I guess, mm-hmm. and it's Gray Wolf one year and
University of Pittsburgh,
and this year it was University of Georgia.
That's right.
Okay, here we go.
Block Party for the Roots. Woofers stacked to pillars made a disco of a city block. Turn these rhymes down a notch, and you can hear the child in me reverb on that sidewalk where a microphone mushroomed with a Caliban cipher. Those couplets could rock a party from here to Jamaica. Its code was simple. Prospero's a sucker MC. The smoke rising off the grill threatens to cloud all memory. My only light, the mountainous cones of street lamps, did not that summer crowd bounce in ceremonial fits. Yes, it was the DJ, and his spinning techniques delicately needled a groove, something from James Brown's Funky President. Then, working the crossfade like a light switch, he composed a stream of scratches, riffs. Song broken down to a dream of song flows from my pen. The measured freedom coming off this page was his pillared spell of drums. It kept the peace. A police car idled indifferently at the other end of the street. What amount of love can express enough gratitude for those reformulations? Life ruptured, then looped back, deaf and gaudy, like those fat gold chains. Keep the sampling language. Keep it booming like mm-hmm. Caliban yelling, somebody, anybody, scream.
Mm-hmm. There are Shakespearean references there. Yes, what is the title of that one again?
It comes from the section Urban Renewal.
Right, that's the first section.
And its title is number 8, Block Party.
Block Party, yes. Right. And I also love, is it Picnic? Or what is the next?
Sunday in July.
Yeah.
Yes.
We have to hear that.
Sure. In the dry pit of picnic grills, a dusty stillness. The laborious wheeze of afternoon slumber, and overhead flies in a holding pattern. Passing clouds mime the faith of ushers, a beguiled congregation swaying beneath the white-gloved hands of heaven. Fana preachers one day sell chip-toed Jesus in the rear of a storefront church. All burdens lay down, all sins suspended. You've seen man's inner furnace scorch this city, not like the driver who opened fire on the street corner of children, nor the teen mother pushing her young from a project roof, nor the husband who held his family hostage, but the sharp sparks of cruelty that explode off the cuff. In a urinous bed, an elderly woman curses the caretaker who smacks her hourly with a fly swatter. On a sidewalk, shirtless boys play a game of dozens, and soon a sucker punch, the wrong word about someone's mother. In a beat, jam-packed bus, the poor return in their Sunday best, breaking a sweat. Windows open, they haven't a chance. Hurry, dusk, all's combustible. Streets flare up, and the sliding window of an ice cream truck opens like the gospel.
Honestly, I think that's my favorite.
Really?
I really do. That and Euphoria. That is, what a litany. What a litany of things I will never forget. The fly swatter every hour. Mm. I think of that all the time. Mm. I guess you don't know which ones of yours bore in to the soul. I guess you know that you like certain ones and other
That's
people like
right.
certain, but you
That's
don't
right.
know which ones are lasting.
No, but and it's always a surprise to hear people's favorites. There recently at the Geraldine R. Dodge Poetry Festival, a man came up to me and introduced himself as a counselor who has sessions every week. And he says he opens up each session with how to listen. Well, that just floored me. How can we ever predict the uses of our work? How can we ever, how do we know what poem, what we're writing down, and what it's going to mean for someone out there?
You know, it's all worth it after that.
Oh, of course.
You can stop right there. Major Jackson at the library. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Now we have to talk about the good stuff.
Yeah.
James Weldon Romare Jackson. How much does he weigh?
He weighed 7 pounds, 10 ounces.
When he was born.
When he was born.
And he's what, 2 months old?
He's 2 months, so I think he might be close to 9 or 10 pounds.
Is he wonderful?
He's fantastic.
Do you sleep at all?
I do sleep. He keeps me up. You know, he has his last cry at about midnight, and then he's out until the morning. So that in itself is a blessing, too.
He doesn't get up for the 3 o'clock.
He doesn't, which is interesting because that's when I normally write between 12 and 3. So,
oh, you're kidding.
So I'm on my way to bed if he's coming up.
You are a nighttime person?
I am. I have to be. I have to be.
And there, then you can get up and
there's
teach?
There's no more hours left.
I used to write between 5 and 7 in the morning before my children
me too. Yeah,
got up
yeah.
to go to school.
That was a great time.
But you're either a morning writer or a nighttime writer. You can't be both.
I think the air is thin at that hour.
That's quiet. A nice remark. Yeah. So you actually can write after working all day, teaching all day.
I can.
Dealing with students. And all of your own professional obligations,
right.
Then you have energy at midnight.
Well, of course, some days are more intense than others.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I think it's important to be able to muster that energy to concentrate on one's own work. We have to do it. I can't see what else I would be doing.
Do you try every night?
I try. I do. My wife can testify to that.
You try every night. You know, I think when I hit an arid spot, it's because I don't feel I have the right to do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I hear you there.
But how do you always feel that you're entitled to do that?
Because I claim it. I claim it as my, like, it's my gift to myself, in a sense. I mean, if I do not, it's going to go by so quickly.
Well, you're going to inspire a lot of people and more of us by hearing more of you at the Library of Congress. Major Jackson.
I will read Euphoria. Late winter, sky darkening after school, and groceries bought from ShopMart. My mother leaves me parked on Diamond to guard her bins, her keys half turned so I can listen to the quiet storm while she smokes a few white pebbles at the house crumbling across the street. I clamber to the steering wheel, undo my school tie, just as Luther Vandross starts in on that one-word tune, Creepin'. The dashboard's panel of neon glows, and a girl my age, maybe 16 or so, in a black miniskirt, her hair crimped with glitter, squats down to pane glass and asks, a date, baby, for 5? Outside, streetlight washes the avenue, a cheap orange, garbage swirling a vacant lot, a crew of boys slapboxing on the corner, throwing back large swills of malt, even the sidewalk teeming with addicts, their eyes spread thin as egg whites. She crams the crushed bill down her stockings, cradles and slides her palm in rhythm to my hips thrashing, in rhythm to Luther's voice, which flutters around that word I now mistake for weep, as sirens blast the neighborhood in my own incomprehensible joy to silence. Out of the house, my mother steps, returned from the ride of her life, studies pavement cracks for half-empty vials, then looks back at bricked-over windows as though what else mattered? A family, a dinner, a car, nothing but this happiness so hard to come by.
Their eyes spread thin as egg whites. There's another swing there, that sweep, the moment when she looks back. You know, there it is. That's your hallmark.
Mm-hmm.
Something's going along. The progress is going along. And then all of a sudden you veer us away cinematically.
Mm-hmm.
And that just changes the world.
Mm-hmm.
It just shifts the whole universe.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder
I like
how
that.
You did that. Mm-hmm. I wonder how you did that. Did you actually see her look back? Or in your mind's eye, did you see her look back?
Well, this is one that's definitely
imagined.
Yeah. And I have to tell this story about how that poem began. I had a student who, in a creative writing class in Oregon, who spoke very soberly about her father, who would take her to a bar of some sort and leave her and her brother in the car for hours. And that just struck me. That just absolutely struck me. Like, what do you do in a car for 2 hours and your father is right there, you know? In any event, I'm very conscious of images, particularly at the end of the poem. I feel like the ending image allows for kind of democratic interpretation. You can look at that image and decide what it means, how it resonates for you, rather than ending on some didactic kind of statement there. Yeah.
So hard to come by. So hard to come by.
Mm-hmm.
What's that whole line?
But this happiness so hard to come by.
This happiness so hard to come by.
Right.
Every one of your last lines is just a slammer, right? We're talking to Major Jackson, and I'm Grace Cavalieri. This is a person who has earned his stripes by just doing it. He didn't have his aunt who was secretary to the mayor. I mean, he just did his writing and it got noticed. Can we hope that that is the way it is? Is that the way it is in life? But do you think there are a lot of people that maybe aren't getting noticed?
Of course.
Too many?
You know, I feel like in this environment, I mean, we have more journals being published at this hour. There's more kids, young adults, adults entering graduate MFA creative writing programs. There's so many, but one wonders, you know, will everyone get their proper hearing?
Mm-hmm.
And I
their
think it's
hearing.
A matter of, you know, and that's different for each person. You know, I have a friend, a colleague who publishes on the web under an anonymous name, and she's more famous as her as being a poet on the web than she is as a scholar, which is fascinating to me. And that's her hearing. She's fine with that. She doesn't wish to publish in print, and she gets mail from all around the world, you know. But I think it's a matter of finding how you're going to have your hearing and aspiring to it and working towards it. And of course, it's also a matter of timing. I mean, really, when the world is going to discover you and when will you be ready for that moment?
Yeah. Well, different poets have different energy flashes.
Mm-hmm.
I see very much yours as part of the tradition of American letters. I can actually see you in the big parade, and it is a literary.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the page,
mm-hmm.
and it's of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I see you, because I see the references that you depend on and who nourish you and what you do with those.
Right.
So you're very much born from the book, clearly.
Right.
Was that your grandmother that had all those books magazines?
That was her. She went to number of used bookstores and would just fill up that hallway, and on topics that range from religious topics, Christian books, which she was an evangelist.
Yeah.
But for her, you know, it was important that we read,
But did you stay with her?
Oh, yeah, I grew up with her. I stayed with her from maybe age 2. Yeah, age 2 to age 12.
So we could take a lesson from that just if we keep a lot of books in the house. I mean, that's just like number one.
Right, she didn't force us on us.
Yeah,
it was just
have
there.
Them there.
We you know, passed by those books every time we went to bed, you know. And eventually she knew that we would pull a few of them down.
Is she still alive?
No, unfortunately not. Unfortunately.
Did she see you write?
No.
So she never knew on this level.
Right. That's right. Yeah. That's right. But she knew I was bookwormish.
Mm-hmm. And she's watching now, anyway. Major Jackson, I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're going to hear more. The book is Leaving Saturn, and I bet you there's another book coming up.
Yes, there is.
What's the title?
The temporary title is Hoops, which is the title poem of
a long poem
that I wrote. The first section of Hoops is in Leaving Saturn. But I finished 3 more sections, and I'm really happy with it. Proud of it.
Are we going to hear a premiere?
Well,
there's some new. I'm looking at stuff that is not published.
That's right. This is a letter to Brooks.
Can we hear it?
Sure. I'll read an excerpt. It's pretty long. Dear Gwendolyn, or is it dear Madam, or is Courage would more likely say Mama Gwen? He, unlike orphaned Adam, had you no less arriving to the fray, that surrogate mentor friend who pays art's admission fee. Only since your absence, our tour has been self-guided. Anthologists disagree, respectfully, of course, for what is a corpus but the spirit on foot? On such ground, I begin my epistolary chat, although I gather you'd prefer we strut on through fisted pens raised imaging truth. Plus up there, you must, I bet, have other celestial errands with which to bother. I consulted Langston, my son, on this point, who thought you now in charge of lyres and harps, tuning strings, adorning joints, an answer he imagined I'd like to hear. The professorial poet whose overbearing view, children best fulfill dad's dreams, thus prove black laureates lurk in the genes. How vain, too, those parents who schedule a child's every waking hour, from ballet instruction to sailing camps to, as usual, a learning of the scales. Horseplays for the underclassed lazy. I've heard say Mattel's to market kitty palm pilots, or was it, oh shoot, laptops for tots. I take my cue, as you have probably guessed, from the recent spat of epistles, Doty's letter to Walt Whitman, his largesse of fraternal pluck make many an apostle, but after several reads, it was the muscle of Auden's eye that had me first concede. One's growth relies on one's gift to exceed one's reach. So I hope this note is welcomed, your kindnesses being legendary. Death fails to place a moratorium on poets' fan mail, yours especially. Michael S. Harper et al. Brazenly claim your work imminent among the boys. Your pen's the equal of Chaucer, Dante, Joyce. Reviews assure our letter bins stay full. We're not likely to receive death threats. Beware wax-sealed envelopes bearing black skulls. Biocritics will shortly cause us fret. Albeit doubtful packages of anthrax should arrive at heaven's pearly gates. Then doubtful too, Hugh Hefner and his playmates. I contemplated sending by email. We've gone gaga over the inbox. Each in his cell, blinking forward, fulfills globalism's promise. Round-the-clock friendships, a form for every boycott. Electronic petitions are a bit of a drag. How many times will the NEA be bagged? Thousands of fingers, even now as I write, draw near the keyboard's enter key in hopes of keeping at bay the strange sight of their faces reflected in the screen, or the dreadful lie that life is but a dream, the mean world seen through the inflated tear, callous enough to ignore our reckless fears. But why write? Truth, I cannot envision an exemplary figure who demands greater attention. So many questions linger. I thought of you in Ireland while biking the countryside. My hand swept aside a delicate mist of longing and saw myself with my childhood gang on the stoop where we played hearts for dimes, slapbox, or simply posed against a ride, crotch cupping. Those lush green Irish plains fell on the upclimb, yet the expanse was wide, so I suffered the exile's self-afflicting, evil-eyed probe. I would have felt as alien in Sierra Leone. What was I doing so far from home? I recalled suddenly your well-spun phrase, puzzled wreckage of the middle passage. I know, bewilderment bores, but I was amazed. Your lines give weight to my, our baggage. Much of art's doing is lifting the sheet off the cage, the psychic wounds below rendered bite-sized, pertinent, grave. Sovereignty was my disguise. Yet explain it thus, remembrance of life summoned in a stroke or song or delivered in a few lines of verse should somehow lift, steady us. The meandering river, the embraced body held as it shivers, a waning sky, a fairy scream at dusk, baked blueberries spilling from a pie crust.
Mm.
And it goes on.
That's
on.
An ambitious poem.
Thank you.
That is not completed?
No, it's going
to be a book-length poem.
It's going to be a book-length poem, yes.
Major Jackson at the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. That is a book-length poem.
That's right. That's right. It's going to, yes, it's going to stretch.
And you, it's a formal verse.
It is. It's written in rhyme royal.
Seven lines.
That's right.
Seven lines to a stanza.
That's right.
And I'm looking at the pattern on the page, which tells me a lot, which tells me an awful lot. And talk to me about the indentations, the second and the fourth and fifth lines.
Yes. Well, I've read a few before approaching this. I was trying to find a form. And I do want to write in form in writing this letter to Gwendolyn Brooks because it's something that she did early on, which we all famously know. She stopped after 1968. But I want to talk to her whole self. So that means not ignoring that facility that she had with language and with poetry. So I was searching around and I came across Auden's letter to Byron, that Auden wrote. And that's his pattern, that indentation. And it gives, I think it's more visually pleasurable on the page than the other
just the block.
Poem. Yes, than just the block.
Well, the whole book isn't to Gwendolyn.
Yes.
The whole book
yes,
is to Gwendolyn?
Yes, this is the manuscript to Gwen, yes.
This is
yes.
Really incredible.
Well, thank
you'll
you.
Go many places using her as your mentor, but I mean, no, in the poem, I can see how you will go the river will go in many rivulets just from her source.
That's right.
But a book, you must have an idea, or don't you have an idea where it's going?
I have some topics that I want to address, but like all good letters that deviate in subject, is I also want to talk about subject matter that's not relevant to her and her work, but more talk to us, almost talk to the reader in a sense. So, you know, I have the Gwendolyn Brooks, the figure by which I'm talking through her to all of us.
They say that every writer writes for just one person, and so in this you will write for her.
For her. Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's anything like it. Tell me if there's something like it, a book-length poem.
Auden's poem is pretty long, 133 stanzas in four sections, and Mark Doty's letter to Walt Whitman is a long poem.
That's
it's not book length, but it definitely appears in his latest book.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's
And you like Doty a lot.
Yeah, I do.
You've mentioned him before.
Yes.
We like you. He's Major Jackson. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we're listening to his work, his new work and his published work. And I really feel that that's a treat to be the first in on that one.
Thank you.
How many pages have we heard?
Thus far, you heard...
Three or four,
that's right.
And, only 100 left to go. Hey, you're off and running. This is great. What are we going to hear from Leaving Saturn? This is the prize-winning book.
That's right.
Carl Phillips, boy, what an angelic hand he has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see.
Many of the things said of him create awe, when one reads them. And one thing, Mosaic magazine called Major Jackson humble, intelligent, and talented. Now, those are three very modest words. But I liked those three. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. I was
humble,
was surprised. Intelligent. Not surprised to read it, but
talented.
I was happy to hear it coming from particularly that writer, who I admire his work. This is Rock the Body Body, and I'm just going to read the first section. Rock the Body Body for Cornelius Eady, 1. One summer night, I learned the art of breakdancing from a guy I'd only known as Moon in exchange for algebra lessons on Mondays. A member of the Pop-Along Kids, Moon taught me how to flick my wrist and make a wave. Check out the electric boogie, he said, and work like a robot. One hand extended, the fingers curling and uncurling as the arm joints and shoulders in one fluid motion followed each other like butterflies. I half watched, trying to mimic the simple placement of feet, but mainly I thought of all the girls that would soon form a circle as I created illusions with my body.
This is what Garrett Hongo says. Whether Jackson writes of the street and ball yard scenes from his Philadelphia youth, the discos and jazz clubs, or excursions into the multicultural and white liberal worlds of his university days, his predominantly insouciant style animates them all, as it also achieves an unmistakable refinement in artful phrase-making and exacting cadences. Jackson is a superb poet who dances as he labors. Leaving Saturn is a book that rocks the body body. How do you know Garrett Hongo?
Garrett was my teacher.
Oh, that's right. He's in
University
Oregon.
University of Oregon.
That's right. He
is. But I was well aware of his work as an undergraduate. I'll never forget receiving an assignment to go home one weekend and choose a poet out of this anthology edited by X.J. Kennedy. And as much as I was enjoying Shelley and the others, I came across Garrett Hongo's The Cadence of Silk and was just blown away. It was a poem, it was a basketball poem, and it was one of the first poems, although I'd been reading Langston Hughes and Robert Frost, this was one of the first poems that spoke to my reality as a basketball fan and a fan of the Sixers. And I knew that team that Garrett described in that poem, that particular year or seasons of the Lakers, that particular dynasty. But it was fantastic to read that poem.
Was that before you met him?
That was before I met him. And when I joined the Painted Bride and became the curator there, I called him up in Oregon and asked him if he would come and read. And he did not read during my tenure there, but he would eventually read. But by this time, I think we spoke during that conversation for an hour. And
he the reason you went to Oregon?
He was the reason. I really wanted to study with he and Dorian Lux and a guy who wind up leaving, but he's a fantastic writer of poetry, Terry Hummer.
I wonder if you would read Mr. Pate's Barbershop. That's pretty long.
Oh, thank you.
But I love Mr. Pate.
Yes. Why didn't I read that one?
Let's read that one, okay?
Mr. Pate's Barbershop. I remember the room in which he held a blade to my neck and scraped the dark hairs forresting a jawline. Stacks of ebonies and jets, clippings of black boxers, Joe Frazier, Jimmy Young, Jack Johnson. The color television bolted to a ceiling like the one I watched all night in a waiting room at St. Joseph's while my cousin recovered from gunshots. I remember the old Coke machine, a water fountain by the door, how I drank the summer of 88 over and over from a paper cone cup and still cannot quench my thirst. For this was the year funeral homes boomed, the year Mr. Pate swept his own shop, for he had lost his best little helper, Squeaky, to crossfire. He suffered like most barbers suffered, quietly, his clippers humming so loud, he forgot Ali's lightning left jab, his love for angles, for carpentry, for baseball. He forgot everything and would never be the same. I remember the way the blade gleamed fierce in the fading light of dusk, and a reflection of myself panned inside the razor's edge, wondering if I could lay down my pen, close up my ledgers and my journals, if I could undo my tie and take up barbering, where months on end a child's head would darken at my feet and bring with it the uncertainty of tomorrow. Or like Mr. Pate, gathering clumps of fallen hair at the end of a day in short, delicate wisps, as though they were the fine findings of gold dust he'd deposit in a jar and place on a shelf, only to return Saturdays, collecting as an antique dealer collects, growing tired, but never forgetting someone has to cherish these tiny little heads.
Mm-hmm. The prophetic voice of Major Jackson. Two people have alluded to you as a Yoruba priest.
Hmm.
Al Young says something like that, and Michael Weaver does also. What does that mean to you?
I think that means a close attention to the role of ancestors in our lives, history.
And majesty.
And I say
majesty. You can't say that. I can.
Yes.
And so with that, we will have a final poem.
Sure. This is called Indian Song. Freddie Hubbard's playing the cassette deck, 40 miles outside haze, and I've looked at this Kansas sunset for 3 hours now, almost bristling as big rigs bounce and grumble along I-70. At this speed, cornfields come in splotches, murky yellows and greens abutting the road's shoulder, the flat wealth of the nation whirring by. It's a kind of ornamentation I've gotten used to, as in a dream, espaliered against the sky's blazing, cloud luffs cascade lace-like, darkening whole fields. 30,000 feet above, someone is buttering a muffin. Someone stares at a sky phone, and momentarily a baby cries in pressurized air. Through double paint squares, someone squints, fields cross-hatched by asphalt strips. It is said Cezanne looked at a landscape so long, he felt as if his eyes were bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
No matter that, I'm heading west. It's all so redolent, this wailing music. By my side, you fingering fields of light, sunflowers over earth, miles traveled, a patchwork of goodbyes.
A patchwork of goodbyes. The voice of Major Jackson. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We wish to thank the Motion Picture, Broadcasting, and Recorded Sound Division of the Library of Congress. This program is made possible by the Humanities Council of Washington, D.C. and the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry. You can hear these programs on the library website, www.loc.gov/poetry, and find out more about The Poet and the Poem at www.gracecavalieri.com. Our engineer is Bill Haley. Post-production is by Mike Turpin of MET Studios. I'm Grace Cavalieri.